wrong?
I have
it. Current geek! Current geek! Uh-huh.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Current Geek, the talk show about items of interest to the geeks of the world and you. I'm Scott Johnson. He's Tom Merritt. Hi, Tom.
Hello, Scott Johnson. I am, in fact, Tom Merritt, and ready to talk about some geeky stories suggested by the audience.
Yeah, they're real good at that. They're good at digging them up and then having them kind of match the tone of what we try to do on these news episodes. So hats off to them.
And by the way, I do want to get a shout out. Jeff Rose on Twitter, after having most of the submissions last time, said, maybe I should settle down or dial back. And we're like, no, keep it coming, Jeff. Lead the way. More people should join Jeff. Yeah. Jeff shouldn't slow down at all.
I agree. He's good. That guy is prolific, as they say. Very impressive.
Jeff is not the problem here.
No, it's the rest of you are the problem.
It's not rest. Actually, we have a few more submitters this week, so I'm very happy.
Oh, good. Well, everyone be more like Jeff. And now, sit still and listen as we do headlines.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tom, what is going on?
Researchers from the National University of Singapore, in collaboration with some researchers at the University of Essex and University of Cambridge, found that regular tea drinkers had brain regions that were interconnected in a more efficient way than those who avoided tea altogether. I feel as a coffee drinker, I should hasten to add, this study did not take coffee into account at all. This makes no claims about coffee. It's purely about tea versus not tea. But it's believed that compounds in tea may improve connections between regions of the brain. The study found the effect with green tea, with oolong, and with your good old-fashioned black tea that was drunk at least four times a week by people for about 25 years.
Oh.
So you throw them back a couple of teacups this week ain't going to make a whole change. This is a long-term investment.
I was going to say, if you get started now, let's say if you're 10 years old, good time to start, I guess.
Yeah. If I do this, by the time I'm 75, I'll have increased brain interconnection.
Great. It'll just be everything else that'll be wrong with us. This is interesting because I'm always fascinated by humans' ability or inability to find connections between the things we consume and the end result of those things. So now we finally have a study that says, hey, over 25 years, a little tea will do you some good. But man, what a bummer.
Yeah, I mean, this is something where, we study these things to find out, because people are like, you're drinking too much tea. Or somebody's like, I think tea is the secret of my success. And so the scientist is like, I don't know. Let's find out. Let's look. Yep. Can we find any connections at all? And they did. They found some connections. Now, whether it actually does improve connections between regions of the brain needs further study. Mm. All they found was a correlation between regular tea drinkers and having those increased interconnections. Could be that having those increased interconnections makes you crave tea. I don't know. Like, you got to do more studies on that.
Yeah.
Before you can...
I'm not a big tea drinker because I don't like the taste. I also don't like coffee for the same reason. Gross. I think it's gross. Mm-hmm. Just not for me.
And yet we're friends.
Yeah, we're friends somehow.
It just shows.
Yeah.
It takes different strokes to rule the world.
That's right. If we learned anything from different strokes, it was that it took different strokes.
Mr. Drummond hated tea also.
That's right.
But Willis loved it.
He loved it. What you talking about, Willis? So in my case, I actually really like these little tea capsules that I get that are just kind of good for a little perking you up in the morning, but it's just green tea in like a capsule form. And so I guess I kind of do have, I guess I like tea, but in a different form. And I wonder if that's...
Wait, when you say it's a capsule, you just swallow a pill that has tea in it?
It's got tea in it. Yeah. It's like a little...
And you say you like them?
I like them.
Or you like them better than drinking tea?
I like it better than drinking tea because I don't have to taste it. I don't have to actually drink it.
You're taking it because you think the green tea is good for you.
That, and it also, it's like a nice little, wake me up in the morning kind of thing.
Yeah, because it gives you a little perk up.
Yeah. Sure. Which a lot of people get from their regular tea drinking, but I'm just, I'm not saying
I
this,
wonder if the pill form of tea has the same effect, or if you need the heat, if you need the brewing.
Yeah, like see, I don't
maybe,
know.
Maybe not. I'm not saying it's one way or the other.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like either way, I'm too late to learn this now. So thanks a lot, science.
Matuba's like, oh, Scott, that's actually speed. That's not, that capsule isn't green tea.
Oh, no. What have I done? Shoot, I was told it was green tea. It was really Adderall or some form of it. Dang
it. Yeah, it's just it's the street name for...
Well, what are you going to do?
Yeah, that green tea.
Here's how I'll stay awake. I'll watch streaming services, but I sure hope
NBC
there's more.
NBC announced its streaming service will launch in April 2020 under the name Peacock.
What? Hold on. They're really going to call it Peacock?
And they're proud, I'm sure.
Wow.
To name it that. Right. I mean, let's just everybody take a moment to get the jokes out of your system. Do your little childish laughter.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be like, as I've been saying today, it'd be like CBS calling their CBS All Access Big Eye.
Big Eye.
But okay.
Sure.
It's going to be called Peacock, and okay, it's going to have 15,000 hours of movies and back catalog of TV shows. There'll probably be some connection with the NBC Olympics coverage. They're definitely going to be promoting it during the Olympics. The back catalog will include episodes of The Office, and coming in the fall of 2020, episodes of Parks and Rec will move over from Hulu to Peacock. Peacock will launch originals in the autumn as well. One of the originals will be a reboot of Battlestar Galactica.
Whoa. Okay.
We've needed that. It will be rebooted by Sam Esmail, who did Mr. Robot. I'm always interested in a Sam Esmail joint, so that'll be interesting.
Sure.
There's also a bunch of other stuff, comedy series from Ed Helms and Mike Schur. They were both parts of The Office. They'll be doing one called Rutherford Falls. There's a reboot of Saved by the Bell coming.
Mm.
And a limited series called Dr. Death, starring Jamie Dornan, Alec Baldwin, and Christian Slater, among others. That's all coming in the fall, though. So April 2020, you get the back catalog in the movies. There's going to be some Olympics content on there. We don't know what yet. And then in the autumn of 2020, that's when you get all the originals starting to show up.
Interesting. If they...
No price announced.
Either. Right. If they would have... I mean, everybody's getting to the streaming game and stuff. But if they had said full Olympic coverage, I would probably be pretty piqued on this, because I don't do terrestrial TV anymore. And I don't really do an antenna, so I wouldn't mind seeing Olympic coverage in a way that would be cool, live or not, you know, something cool over there. Like, we'll see what that limited coverage means. But my bigger surprise with this is that, not surprise, I guess this is the way of streaming moving forward. The model is, here's a bunch of old stuff, but also we're making original content and only there. Like, that's the new way. That's the just the thing we should expect from somebody's new streaming service, right?
I mean, that was pioneered by HBO.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
HBO said, we'll show back catalog of movies and create originals. Mm-hmm. And it worked great. And then Netflix came along and we're like, back catalog of movies and TV shows, and we'll make originals. And mm-hmm. Hulu came along and said, back catalog of TV shows plus current TV shows plus movies, and we'll make originals. That is the formula. It's a constant conversation where people are like, the streaming is too expensive. It's more expensive than cable. And to which I always respond that, no, it's not. You don't have to have everything. Just don't subscribe to all of it. With cable, you had to pay your $100 plus a month, or you didn't get cable. Right. There was that choice. You can, you know, play around with which tiers you wanted to subscribe to, but essentially it was all or nothing. Now you can decide to turn one on for a month, turn one off for a month, not have it at all, not worry about missing those shows. I mean, I think the older people are, the more likely they are to think, well, but how am I going to watch the shows everyone watches? And the fact of the matter is, we don't do that anymore.
Right.
Not everybody watches the same shows. There's the occasional Game of Thrones, which has a big audience, or a Walking Dead. But for the most part, people just watch different things the way we read different books, and we're just gonna have to get used to that.
Yeah, if anything, it's just a little bit more like, well, when's Netflix gonna have something that you just have to see, and then we're all gonna talk about for weeks?
And the beauty is, when they do, if you're not already a Netflix subscriber, you just subscribe for a month and watch it.
Right. Now, more along the lines of what would probably be a bigger impact for our listeners and for you and I in particular, this Battlestar Galactica thing, I don't want to undersell this. This is them saying, hey, we're going to go and remake it again, or are they going to make it in the vein? Do we know, I guess? Are they going to make it in the vein of the 2000 early aughts Ron Moore business, or is this a whole new take? I guess we don't know all that, but
it's called a reboot.
Yeah.
At this point.
Okay.
The otherwise the log line is Battlestar Galactica returns to television with Sam Esmail producing.
Okay.
There was kind of an offhanded comment calling it a more modern take.
What is that?
Although
mean?
Battlestar Galactica from Ronald Moore felt pretty modern when it came out back in the early 2000s, but I guess now that's, you know, almost 20 years old. So I get, you know, maybe it's time for a 20 years later take that is more modern.
I guess, but isn't the whole concept of that show, though, is that it's set in some ancient past?
Yeah, right. Exactly. So when you say modern, I mean, it's not modern in universe. It's just a modern take by us. Okay, this just struck me, though.
Yeah.
Scott.
Yeah.
Battlestar Galactica came out at the end of the 70s.
It did.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then about 20 years later, you got the reboot.
Sure.
From Ronald D. Moore. We're not quite as long, but we're almost 20 years later from the reboot with Ronald D. Moore.
Yeah, that's true. Well, no, it was closer. It was closer to 30 years for the first jump. Wasn't it 78 to 2004?
It came out because it came out, what, 2002?
I guess 2003, I guess, was the...
It's getting closer to 25.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Still, though, that's
But it's not crazy. It's not like Battlestar Galactica just went off the air.
No, right? You're right. I think of it that way, though. Even though it was like 09 that it ended, it's like
it's
over
10 years
ago. Still
kicking around in the consciousness. Exactly.
Sure, sure. And that's why... I may be the wrong... Well, whatever. I have to be their audience for this because who else cares about Battlestar Galactica except the guys like you and I?
Young kids who never watched either of the other versions might be like, oh, what's this show? It's space. That's cool.
I guess so. It just seems like the name needs to sell you and then maybe the parents get it and then the kids get into it. I don't know, but I'm curious about that. That is a tall order. The fact that Sam Esmail is involved is a huge thing for me because I'm into whatever he does next after Mr. Robot ends. And to find out it's this is weird. If his name wasn't attached, I think I would be a little more cynical about it.
Oh, yeah. But I'm already skeptical, but I'd be like fully against it if it was not someone like Sam Esmail involved. So I'm curious. And by the way, Netflix has reportedly struck a deal to get all 180 episodes of Seinfeld from Sony Pictures Television. That'll last for 5 years, starting in 2021. Hulu has it right now in the U.S. Amazon has it everywhere else. But in 2021, it's going to go to Netflix. So this battle over like, oh, Netflix is losing Friends. Netflix is losing The Office. Everybody's taking things back. I've been saying for a while, it's not about taking back. It's about creating competitors. And we're finally getting competitors to Netflix. And if you're not going to create a streaming service, as Sony doesn't appear to be, then you're going to sell your stuff to people, and Netflix has the cash to buy your premier content. So it bought Seinfeld. So
yeah.
This is what an open marketplace looks like. We just have to get used to
it. Yeah, everyone get used to it. It's cool. I'll get my Seinfeld fix now, it turns out, because I already have Hulu and Netflix, and I plan to keep those. Those are my two open services that are always sort of running. And then these others can come in, and I might try them for a month here and there to see what's cool. And if something's really great, I'll drop something else. Like, we have the power now. No more two-year contracts.
Yeah.
None of that. You go cancel it next month if you want to, and you're out 15 or 10 or 7 or whatever it is you paid for that service for that full 30 days.
Another way to think about it is no one has been complaining about Crunchyroll or Viki or Tubi or Fubo. Or, like, these are all legitimate streaming services that have been around for a few years now.
Yeah.
And no one's like, there's too many of them because they didn't care about them because they didn't have NBC's name on it.
I agree.
So... Yeah. So I think there's a little bit of brand overload. We're like, but it's NBC. I have to get it. I have NBC on my cable. And maybe you do, maybe you don't. Let's see what it is. Maybe you don't need Disney Plus. You know? Yeah, it's got a great back catalog, but are you gonna watch all those movies every day?
Yeah.
No. I mean, you're gonna have to figure out, like, I don't know, maybe Netflix doesn't need to be in your arsenal, right?
Yeah.
Maybe you realize you're not using Netflix and you put it on pause. Maybe you realize Hulu is not for you. Maybe you just don't even watch Prime Video, although that one, you get it free with your Amazon Prime subscription anyway. So if you're not canceling the shipping, you might not cancel the video. But
sure.
It's going to be interesting to see how this shakes out. Not all of these services will survive.
Right. And not all of them will, you know, hit the quality levels that they're aiming for. So we'll see, but it's really exciting right now. I'm super stoked. I think we can all unanimously say, though, Peacock is a stupid name for anything. So good job, guys.
Not a great name.
Well done.
It's just not. I'm sorry.
It's bad. It's bad.
Yeah.
It's just
bad. I mean, I get it. Proud as a peacock. It's been the symbol of NBC. The little dong, dong, dong.
But nobody ever says it. Nobody ever says it. No one ever says the peacock.
But no one says.
Right.
Well, proud as a peacock was their slogan in the 80s.
for a while.
But even then, people didn't refer to NBC as the Peacock Network.
No, and they're not going to. This moving forward, imagine the conversation. It's like, what are you doing this weekend? Oh, I thought we just watched something on Netflix. I thought we watched something on Hulu. Let's watch something on Prime. Now you got to say, oh, I think we'll watch that new series on Peacock.
Just come over and we'll peacock and chill.
See? It's bad.
We'll what?
Yeah. We'll do what again?
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I think it was either Patrick or Sarah on Daily Tech News Show said, you know, everybody thought iPad was a dumb name and we got used to it. Maybe we'll get used to it. I don't know.
Maybe.
Discord is phasing out game bundles. Remember last year it launched game bundles for $10 a month or $99 annually as part of the Nitro subscription. Mm-hmm. Well, Discord said in a statement, while we and some of you love these games, the truth is the vast majority of Nitro subscribers didn't play them. So after careful consideration, we won't be hitting continue when these contracts come up for renewal. The Nitro games catalog will be removed on October 15th. So if you are one of the people who played the games, you got till October 15th to finish them. Otherwise, they're going away.
Yeah, it's basically, so what this comes down to for me is it's actually kind of a cool idea. It's just it's kind of the wrong time for it. There's a saturation we're hitting right now with Steam. We're talking about PC games here. Steam is a juggernaut and still is. You got pretenders to the crown like the Epic Store where they got a lot of money behind it, but you know they're still new and cutting their teeth. You have good old games.com. You have various sources and services, and I think that was just too much. And people don't use Discord for the games themselves. They use Discord to talk about the games and to be a community and to hang out and do whatever, but they don't. You don't go there going, ah, oh, what's the hottest new indie game I can pick up? You've already done that on Steam, and you already own it for $12 instead of spending, you know, $10 a month to play that and a bunch of other stuff. It's not a bad idea. I just think it was bad timing. I don't really blame them. Well, I don't know. It's
honestly, it's a little bit of hindsight is 2020. Yeah. On the one hand, Discord saying, hey, game subscription services are catching on. Maybe we should try one. It is a good idea.
Right.
For whatever reason, it didn't work for them. And bravo to Discord for saying, hey, guess what? People are subscribing to Nitro, but not for that reason. So we're not going to keep it going. Sorry to those of you who did like it, but it wasn't enough of you.
Yeah. And I like that.
I think that's perfectly fair.
100%. And I like the tone of that. I like that. That's them not. This isn't. They're good at this anyway. Generally speaking, Discord's great about their patch notes and their PR stuff. Mm-hmm. It's all very straightforward. Self-effacing. They're not trying to be all, you know, uppity PR company sounding about any of this stuff. So when they come out and say, some of you like us love these games, not very many of you played them, so why are we, you know, like, it's just very matter of fact, and I like that. So weirdly, I don't see this as a huge negative thing for them. They'll be in search of additional revenue in other places, and good luck to them for that. But even as a guy, I try everything. I've got games on good old games. I try stuff on everything so I can talk about it. And I knew about the Nitro stuff, and I never got around to a single game. So I'm not saying I'm like everybody else, but I'm saying, you know, as small a piece of evidence as that is, people like me who should have been all into it just couldn't find the time, or it was just a pain. Like, why go sign up for a new thing? I'm already getting this through some other thing, or this is a game I already own. That's the other problem, is a lot of these games aren't day and date brand new games. These were games that have been out since 2016 and are great games, incredible games, but they're already available and people have already bought them and played them or have them on their Switch by now. Like, there's a lot of time has passed since they were new, and because they could never really get it around to here it is day and date brand new, it just kind of became untenable, and I'm not that surprised. So good luck to them.
Every time I saw Nitro pitched to me as a thing I should pay for, it was about server features. If they pitched me games, which they very well may have, I didn't notice.
Right.
That never compelled me. But there would be like, hey, you can do these cool server things if you get Nitro. I'd always be like, well, that's interesting. Maybe I'll look into that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That seems to be what most people.
And for the record, Discord, a cool name for a service.
Yeah. You like Discord?
Peacock. I mean the first time I heard it, I went, oh, that's cool. I mean, it's kind of got a negative.
Yeah, I never thought, what a weird name. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It just seemed like a cool name. But if you say Peacock, I just want to slap you. I just want to go whack. Psh,
psh, psh. Did you catch that new show on Peacock?
No, because I hate the name. Maybe they'll change it. Maybe it'll end up being like, I don't know. What else could they do? They don't have any other.
Peacock that.
I hate it.
You ever seen Parks and Rec? Just peacock it.
See, peacocking it. It's not. And chat room, you're thinking, oh, it's just because it's got pee and cock in it. No, I don't like it. Just. It's even just the bird. Even if we're just talking about the bird, it's a terrible name. I hate it.
All right. What was a cool name but is no longer a service is MoviePass. MoviePass announced last Friday it was shutting down, and Saturday it shut down. Apparently, efforts to recapitalize MoviePass had not been successful. To be honest, I thought they would be saying those words a long time ago. So I was very, I wasn't surprised to see this, but made a lot longer than I thought they would. Parent company Helios and Matheson are considering a sale of some or all of the MoviePass assets. Those include MoviePass itself, but also MoviePhone and MoviePass Films. The original founder of MoviePass, who's no longer part of the company, is making noise about maybe trying to buy it back from Helios and Matheson. We'll see if he does that. But they had 3 million members at one point. They were going strong, and then it declined to about 225,000 last time we heard a number in April. So no surprise that it finally just ran out of steam.
Yeah, I had it for a short couple months, and it was unfortunately right around the time things were really bad in the press for them, and they, you know, were changing the program so quickly that you could actually be caught at a movie theater, and they would make a change that day, and then you were screwed out of whatever deal you thought you were going to get that day at the theater. So it was real weird and real rough, and I always loved the idea, and it did feel like it felt like these guys were onto something that would very quickly be enacted by competing sources like AMC has and others, but that they just weren't going to be the ones to carry it through. And for whatever that's worth, they, you know, they took a sword to prove that they had a really great concept. So I guess rest in peace. I don't know. Maybe you'll get sold off. And does MoviePhone, can I still call MoviePhone and have them go, perhaps you'll want to see this movie.
You can.
All right.
Well, 777 film. I do think, and I mentioned this on Cord Killers, think that, you know, we got to credit MoviePass with, if not changing the landscape, certainly accelerating the change in the landscape to where, at least here in the United States, and I know in the UK and some other parts of the world, subscriptions have become a common offering by theaters. Yeah. Good for MoviePass.
Yeah, good for me. Well done, MoviePass. Well done.
Your like will not be seen again unless your founder buys you back. MIT engineers have developed a material made of vertically aligned carbon nanotubes that absorbs more than 99.995% of incoming light. That's four nines.
Wow.
So not as good as your uptime should be, but it's pretty amazing. It was by accident. The engineers had been experimenting with ways to grow carbon nanotubes on electrically conductive materials like aluminum, looking for increased electrical and thermal properties. But the experiment began changing the chlorine etched aluminum foil black. And then when they tested it, they found out it was really black. The discovery is being displayed as an art exhibit at the New York Stock Exchange with the new material wrapped around a $2 million diamond. So it's a black diamond. Practical uses for the material include things like smarter blinders to reduce optical glare in telescopes, especially orbiting telescopes. So it's probably not going to keep the record. There's another material that used to hold the record, and the makers of that material immediately reached out to Engadget and said, we're working on one that's blacker than that. So keep your eyes out. It's the race for light absorption is on.
Yeah. What would you see the most practical use case here? Like cars, maybe? Maybe it's, I don't know, sunglasses?
Well, no, you want cars to be visible.
Yeah.
You don't want them absorbing light, do you?
Well, you don't want, like, the black ones get really hot. And unless you have a white car, if you have a white car, it reflects it. If you have a black car, it absorbs it. Does the absorbed heat go, like, where does the heat go?
I mean, it could be used for heat absorption, anything with heat absorption. If you're trying to heat something with panels, maybe some solar panels could use this. I don't know.
Yeah. Some kind of, like, I'm thinking of all recreational stuff. Like if you're going, you go ice fishing, you'd like a little hut that would absorb the heat. And
anywhere where you don't want reflection, anywhere where reflection is a bad idea.
Yeah. So what would that be? Glasses?
Well, the telescopes. Don't think personal use.
I can't help it.
It's not a material you're going to have on your body.
I know. I don't know why.
This is going to be used in big things, big technologies.
I keep thinking of small stuff, but that's dumb.
But also iPhone cases.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like maybe it'll be because that's where
you don't want to absorb that much light though, because then your phone heats up.
No, you're right. But if you're in a car and you've got let's say, okay, you're trying to get rid of glare or reflection. If your windshield is made of some of this material but remains transparent and is not too overly tinted, that's
well,
kind of...
Well, except this material doesn't remain transparent.
Oh, well, then never mind.
I mean, yes, if this material did things it doesn't do, I'm sure we could come up with all kinds of uses.
I know. I got it. Oh, no, that's personal use. Let me think for a minute. I mean, you could cover your clothes. You could make clothes out of it, right? And then go to.
I don't know how expensive it is either. So yeah, maybe it's good for winter clothing. It just absorbs a lot of light.
Go up to Everest and not freeze your butt off and die up there, like everybody.
No, it seems like there's lots of industrial uses that it could be put to.
Yeah.
Send your favorites to our email address, currentgeek@gmail.com.
Yeah, why not? Well, we'd love to hear your thoughts and feelings.
All right. We know you love hearing us talk about weird scientific things. So here you go. Veterinarians and conservationists from Germany, Kenya, and the Czech Republic working at the Aventi Laboratory in Cremona, Italy, have created two embryos of the rare northern white rhino, which will be implanted in a surrogate mother. The only remaining northern white rhinos are female, and they live under armed guard in Kenya. The last male northern white rhino died last year. So these embryos are a big deal because they made them by taking preserved sperm from the male rhinos before they died and eggs that they extracted from one of the two surviving female white rhinos. If they can successfully implant the embryos and bring them to term, it's not a given that they can save the northern white rhino, but it would be a huge step.
Yeah, that's really cool. Then what the guys in Kenya, what do they do? Go, why are we guarding these? Now they're everywhere. And they'll just put down their guns.
Well, I think we've got some time before that happens.
Well, I mean, and the point is obviously there's like extreme.
You think the guards in Kenya will work against this because they don't want to lose their job? No, but then if the white rhinos die out, they lose their job too.
You're right. The whole point of them doing what they're doing is to protect the species because it is extremely dangerous in its current state in terms of it going away. So, this is a good thing. I love this kind of stuff, and I hope what comes of it is more white rhinos. I'm trying to think if I've ever seen a white rhino. They're not like full on like albino looking, are they? Let's see. I can actually look that up. White.
I mean, you could use the internet to find a picture of one.
Yeah, because my guess is they're just lighter skin than
the article that we linked to in our Current Geek Rundown has a picture of Najin and Fatu, the last two female northern white rhinos.
Oh, there they are.
I know you're going to say they're gray.
Yeah, they're kind of concrete.
But they're whiter than other rhinos.
You're right. I mean, you and I are white, but we're not really white. I'm pink and gross, you know?
Yeah.
Same idea.
And I'm tan because I live in LA.
Yeah, look at you. Oxygen bars and all that weird stuff you guys have. But these...
I mean, this is me tan, in case everybody's like, no, you're not tan. I'm like, yeah, actually. You should see me when I'm not there.
You should don't look directly at Tom. He needs some black material to absorb the light.
I get my Irish tan on.
Yeah. Maybe, hey, that's it. That's what that weird material, the MIT stuff will do is it'll help me from burning like a freaking lobster in the sun. That would be nice.
But it absorbs, I mean, it doesn't reflect the light. You want something that reflects the light.
That's true. You know, I think what I want is the opposite of what you're saying. But I do.
You want the most reflective material?
Yeah, but I do like white rhinos. They look like concrete statues. Like if they held perfectly still, they just look like they're made out of stone, and they're really cool. And I don't think I've ever seen one. We have a couple of not black rhinos, but something in between, and at our zoo, and they're really cool. And more rhinos, please. Oh, see, the other thing is everyone thinks rhinos are mean because they got the big horns and everything. They're one of the most gentle animals in the world. It's the hippos you got to watch out for.
Hippos.
The hippos.
Rhinos suffer for the reputation that the hippos deserve. Everybody thinks the hippos are all cuddly. Oh, they're the killers.
Yo, hippos are jerks, dude.
To
name a hippo you've met.
I mean, hashtag not all hippos. I'm sure there's some nice hippos out there. I don't mean to paint you all with a broad brush, but you're more than likely going to get stomped on by a hippo than a white rhino.
Not all hippos. Get that trending, you guys. Oh my gosh. This is a great slate of stories, of course. And if it wasn't for our subredditors, I'm not sure we'd have them. So huge thanks to those guys. Tom, who should we call out today?
Well, of course, as we mentioned, we need to thank Jeff Rose, but also Master Zur, Wayne Something, and Very Understated. Thank you for joining the Jeff Rose Army and submitting stories and voting on them at currentgeek.reddit.com. We know you can't all submit, but you can all vote. It's not hard to go in and look and like, oh, that looks interesting. Let me upvote that. currentgeek.reddit.com.
Nice. Now this. Rolling, 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 rolling. All right. As you know, sometimes we do a segment on the show called Keep On Roland, where Tom reads Scott a passage from French literary critic Roland Barthes' seminal work, Mythologies. I would say Barthes.
Here we go.
Barthes.
Here's your quote of the day, Scott. Take a look.
Okay.
Tell me, or listen, I guess, and tell me what you think of this.
Okay.
What I claim is to live to the full the contradiction of my time, which may well make sarcasm the condition of truth.
Whoa, hold on. All right. Claim to live to the full the contradiction of my time.
So it's a little weirdly phrased. Maybe it has to do with the translation from the French, but he's saying, I believe there is a contradiction in the world in my time. So I live that contradiction to the full, which kind of makes it sarcasm.
I get it. Because he's knowingly doing it and he knows.
Like,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I get that. Boy, this guy was, his head was in places, man. That dude was. He was thinking outside the box, as the kids say.
He was smoking Galois and drinking espressos and
all of that and more.
Having a dip in his baguette and his wine or whatever they do over there in France. I don't know, but yeah, he was doing it.
He was peacocking and chilling.
Basically where I take this is he wanted to say sarcasm is the condition of truth.
Yeah.
And he's like, but how do I get there? How do I end up with that sentiment? Oh, the time is a contradiction, and I live that, and that's the okay. There we go.
Sorry. I mean, you could also say, like, comedians are always saying that comedy is a great way to tell the truth about hard things.
Yeah.
And this kind of falls into that a little bit. Sarcasm does, I think, maybe a tiny bit. I don't know.
I wonder if he's saying things like, "I am a hardworking lazy man."
Could be that.
I work hard at being lazy. I'm living the contradiction.
I know.
And what I just said was sarcastic. And that brings out the truth. The truth is we are all hardworking lazy.
It's pretty deep.
Except in a French accent.
Of course. And through the mouth of a white hippo. All right. That's it for that. Hey, real quick reminder here in the middle of the show. I have something to show the listeners here, actually. So I'm going to hold these up. Our Patreon has one level on it that lets you get custom art every month, and you get it in the form of collectible cards. Here's
for
an example of one.
I will describe it.
Oh, thank you very much. Now, the only problem is for those watching live is my green screen is making some of this be green screen. So I apologize.
A cow has been cut in half.
It's a cow who has been bisected right down the middle. This is a piece of art I drew. This is actually the June 2019 card. As you can see, it's got Tom and I.
Below each half of the cow are the signatures of Tom and Scott.
Yeah, very good. Very good. And then on the back, what do we have here? We got our name. See? Current Geek. See?
Current Geek, the name is on the back of the card. At the top of the card, it says official Current Geek Patreon.
All right. How about this one? This is another one here I'm holding up. Tom, you want to describe that for the listeners?
Mario sits on the edge of an oversized Game Boy.
That's right. Playing a Game Boy also, which is just...
playing a smaller version of the Game Boy.
That's right. And up top, it is July 2019. So if you have supported us in that month, you would have gotten this as well. They are high quality. Only get them this way. This, among many other cool rewards, can be yours simply by going to patreon.com/currentgeek and doing it today.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
All right, time for forecast. We predict the future on the show. It used to be a whole show by itself, but now it's just a segment, and it's a fun way to sort of look ahead and not back.
And it's happier that way.
I agree. So I got one this week. Here's an interesting one, and I stole it from Brian Ibbett. He had this great idea, and I said, dude, I'm using that on Current Geek. He said, no problem. So to give him full credit, here is something Brian Ibbett told me that I think is genius. In the future, audiobooks will allow you... because we've gotten so good at deepfake, not just video and photo and stuff, but audio is going to be included in this as well. It's one of the good sides of us being able to sort of create tenor tone and accents and that sort of thing from people's voices and duplicate those voices, one of the upsides will be we can choose anybody to narrate our books. So you'll go get a copy of, you'll download an audiobook copy of, I don't know, let's say Stephen King's The Stand, because it's on my mind right now. And if you decide, I really want Phyllis Diller to narrate the entirety of The Stand, you can do it. And you could change midway and go, you know what? Don't want to do that anymore. How about David Hasselhoff? How about a thousand other names? How about I want to construct my own kind of cool voice of an accent? I want a low male
Return
voice.
Return of the Jedi as read by Phyllis Diller.
Yes.
I can't, Han.
Is that your Phyllis Diller? Is that what that is? That's pretty good.
As close as I'm going
to
get.
That's pretty good. But the idea being that you no longer have to just deal with the narrator you got. Instead, computers are going to be so good at replicating human voices that you just get Morgan Freeman or someone just died, Morgan Freeman. Morgan Freeman or anybody
it's
you want.
Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, he's going to be like way up on that top 10 list of voices people use. But the big question.
Morgan Freeman should leave his phonemes to science.
Right. He should do that. But here's the problem. Here's the problem, and it's a fair problem. Nobody's going to want to do that for free. In other words, if you're going to represent somebody's voice, there's going to be all kinds of freak out about, you know, that needs to be A, approved by them, and B, they need to see money from that.
But I mean, it may not be like freely available, any voice you want for anybody all the time, open source, which we would love.
Yeah.
But it'll probably happen maybe in more limited situations unless we reform copyright law, which who knows, maybe we will. But I mean, it's not like intellectual property law would stop this from happening altogether.
Right. Right.
Because somebody will say, providing a selection of five different narrators in my audiobook is great. I will make money off that.
Right. And that, here's the funny thing about the argument about making money, though. Because you're using that person's voice likeness, it makes sense that they should get something on the back end. However, they're not actually doing the work. Like, they're not reading it.
Well, but it's like using their face in an ad.
Yeah, I guess so.
Right? So there's going to be a legal fight. Get on the case, legal geek, of the right to use my voice.
Right.
There's already precedent, because if you do a celebrity impersonation in an advertisement and you don't make it very clear that it's not that person's voice, they can sue. And celebrities have won, saying, look, you're using my presence in your ad without my permission, because you've got to sound like person in the ad, and it's not clear it's not me.
Right. I can totally see that happening. But who knows? Maybe we'll get some cool hackery thing going and they'll have to shut us down. They'll have to try to block
you know, what's funny is Andrew Main, host of Weird Things, magician, host of the Discovery show where we went down and he swam with sharks, literally, has been working on a system to do just this, but with the existing voices. So really all you're saying is you take what Andrew Main's been working on, which is like put in a text and let a voice read it. And he's got all kinds of sophisticated stuff that he's doing where like it can tell when a different character's voice changes in the narration and give him different voices.
Oh, wow.
You're just saying do that, but instead of the 10 stock voices that you get from the Amazon Voice Services API, you could have all these famous voices.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't realize he was doing that. I mean, that sounds like maybe we're closer to that than I thought. And honestly, I'd be okay with a kind of build your own voice sort of system. For me, it doesn't have to be a celebrity. It would be cool if I could just say, I want it low. I want it to be a male British voice. I want it to be, I want him to sound like he's in his 70s, or I want him to sound young.
That's like the IP free way to do it. Because you can do that in limited ways with Siri right now. You can choose what kind of voice, or Waze. Mm-hmm. Waze has all kinds of different voices. You can get Sesame Street to read your directions, or Kevin Hart.
I'd love Elvis. That idea. I think that would be really cool. I had no idea he was doing that. That guy's a yeoman. He's always got something rad going on.
He's a renaissance man.
He really is. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. All right, well, that's it for Forecast. And now, this. The best thing of all time this week. We talk about things we really got into this week. And for all we care, it is the best thing of all time this week anyway. Tom, let's start with you. Something to do with power. I'm very excited to hear this.
Ah, power. Power is what you need, and it is what I have. Today's show, Scott, has been mostly powered by the sun on my end. I got solar power installed a couple weeks ago. They came and it was like 3 hours.
Nice.
They put 16 Panasonic solar panels up on the top of my house, plugged it into my circuit breaker box with this, the, you know, a separate box for controlling the solar power system. And then I had to wait for about a week for the city to come out and give me a new meter, because you need a meter that can read both directions, mm-hmm. right? If you're feeding solar power into the grid, that has to be accounted for. So you need a new meter for that. And then today, for the first time, I was able to see the little arrow pointing that in the direction that says you're feeding power into the grid versus taking power out of the grid. So I started to make my own power today with solar power. Two things I want to recommend. One is, if you're in the United States anyway, in most areas of the United States, go to energysage.com just to start your research. They have a whole thing of referrals in there too, if you want to go down that road, but you can do a lot of research as far as what's available, what are the different panels, what kind of inverters do you need, and you can even go so far as to like upload your power bill or even just enter it yourself to find out like, okay, I would need in my location with my general weather, I would need this many panels and it would cost me roughly this much. So you can do all those calculations without talking to anybody or spending a dime if you just want to research it. So big fan of energysage.com. And then if you're in the Southern California area, I want to give a shout out to Solar Optimum over in Glendale, who are the folks who handled my installation, and they were fantastic. Wow. They give a production guarantee so that if I don't get out of these panels what I'm supposed to get, they'll come out and fix it, or they'll make good the difference, and I should be paying $0 in power net over the year.
Geez, that's great. That's so cool. I mean, obviously the investment in the actual panels, though, that's going to take a while to pay down.
Well, and you can do it different ways. There are companies that do leases. My neighbors actually lease their solar panels, or what I think is probably makes more sense these days as the cost of the panels has come down, you can get a loan like you would for a car. And the way all of the companies work is they try to make the loan terms fit your current power bill. So like for 5 years, you're just paying off the loan at the same rate you would be paying for power, and not paying for power, ideally. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the 5 years, you don't have to pay anything anymore. So better than a lease, because you don't have to keep paying for it.
Interesting. I had no idea that was even an option. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
There's still some pretty good rebates and other stuff depending on your state and things to look at as well. So that's very cool. Something I've always wanted to do. Now that you've done it, I may have no more excuses. Maybe I just need to do it.
Yeah, at least go and look up the, you know, do the calculations and stuff. It might make sense.
Yeah, we'll see. For me, my favorite thing this week is kind of dumb because I swore I was never going to do it. But in World of Warcraft, I've gotten way back in, not into Classic like everybody else, but somehow Classic got me just playing retail in a crazy way. And I'd had months of sort of off the game happening, and I was sort of just in, you know, hold out for whatever the next expansion mode is. And for whatever reason, it just re-energized my love of the game, and I've been into it in a way that I haven't been in a very long time.
You started playing Classic, and we're like, yeah, but you know what? All these things are fixed in the real game. Maybe I should play the real game.
Kind of, yeah. And there are a lot of people like me, but there's tons of people who are just loving Classic. That's great. They should love it, and it's rad that they even have it. And I love the vibe around it and all that stuff. I keep having to say this because people accuse me of being a hater, but I don't hate it at all. It's not for me. I don't have the kind of time that Classic takes to really dedicate to. And as a result, it just sort of pushed me back into playing regular. And so I'm this close to flying. And for the last two expansions where they make you do a bunch of hoops to get flying unlocked, I've avoided that because I hate it. But I've actually enjoyed this particular grind, and I'm going to unlock flying, and I might have it in like less than a week. So figure that one out. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm enjoying it, and it's the most fun thing I did this week. So having a good time with it.
Flying in the expansion regions.
In the expansion,
you obviously.
Oh yeah, and all the previous stuff. Everywhere you can fly before, you just fly. But in the new zones, the way they started doing this with Warlords Forward, they made it so you had to, toward the end of the expansion, they would release these sets of achievements you'd have to do.
Yeah.
And if you did them, then you could fly in that. The stuff, you know, the current stuff. It's actually kind of I like the idea that you can't fly at all till the very end of things. I don't love that they make you do a bunch of stuff to do it, but I'm enjoying it. So maybe they were right. I was wrong the whole time.
Maybe, yeah, it turns out.
I don't know. It's very odd. So that's That's me, and that's what I'm enjoying this week. All right, real quick, we got a couple emails I'm going to tear through here from listeners, and I just like these both, and I'm doing both. One was from Cash Nexus, who says, "Hi, Scott and Tom. Scott's forecast about the personal hover drone buzzing around us all gave me this thought. This would make for a great futuristic remake of the Golden Compass." Thanks for the show, Cash Nexus. So Golden Compass is being made, isn't it? Or it's his Dark Materials is being made.
Oh, yeah, you're back now. Okay. I lost you.
Oh, that was weird. I blame solar. Just kidding. I don't blame it. All right. I thought I went away, but I guess I didn't. It was just you that went away.
You did. You went away for me.
Oh, weird. Okay.
But I saw on Twitch that you were still talking, so I'm like, well, he must still be on. He must still have the internet. So
he's there somehow.
Weird. I hung up and reconnected, and that seemed to fix it.
All right. No problem. Anyway, what I was saying was, what was it? It was, oh, the Golden Compass movie was not that great, but I know people love those books, and I guess this Dark Materials thing that's coming to HBO should maybe scratch all those itches for people. But I don't know really what that show is going to do and where it's going to take it. But the idea of hovering drones, hovering about us as personal drones, is an interesting idea.
Yeah,
that's a good idea. Great. I like it. Thanks, Cash Nexus. Then we got one here from Drew from Atlanta, who says, "My wife and I are talking about the Friends theme not long ago and came across an article." He says, here's the TLDR. The link is in our notes, but here's what he says. He says, "The Rembrandts didn't write the song. They only performed it. And honestly, didn't really want anything to do with it. But a radio station cut together a single cut of them, themselves, which spread around the country. This got record studios to put pressure on them to actually record a full song version, which they ended up making. And that made them a ton of money."
Well, yes and no. Actually, I read this AV Club article. And while it's right that they basically wanted a pop song for Friends, so because it was being made by Warner, they went to Warner Brothers Records and said, "Who do you got that you can force to write us a 45-second pop song?" And they're like, "Well, we have this one songwriter who owes us a seventh of a song on her contract for some odd reason." So they agreed that she would write that. So she took a week to write it. She has all these notes still. She said she kept them. Of all the things she wrote down, because she kept watching the pilot and writing down things about the character, she wrote up the words, and they're like, "Okay, great. Who do we get? Well, what about the Rembrandts? They're on Warner Brothers. We can bring them in." And the Rembrandts were like, "Yeah, sure. This sounds fun. We like the show. Just don't tell anybody it's us, because we're trying to be, you know, early 90s serious alternative rock stars. That's just the way it is, baby."
Yeah.
Which was their big hit at the time. Yeah. So they wrote the song. And then, yeah, that radio station looked for a single version and couldn't find one. So they basically just took the theme from the TV show and cut it together three times in a way that sounded like a regular length single. And people loved it. And it took off. And the Rembrandts were mad. The record company was mad. They tried to stop radio from playing it. They're like, "This isn't helping anyone. No one's getting any money from this. It's not promoting the show. It's not promoting the album." But eventually it just had such a life of its own that the record company forced the Rembrandts to record a version and add it to their record LP. LP was a dark, like more rocking version of the Rembrandts. Mm. So the song sticks out like a sore thumb. apparently they just tacked it on as a bonus track, like a hidden bonus track, so that it wouldn't disrupt the track listing. But they didn't release it as a single. So it spent 8 weeks at number one on Billboard with no single out there. You had to buy the album LP to get it. And that's where he's like, it ended up making them money because they sold full albums to people who just wanted that song.
Yeah, that's crazy how that all panned out. Well, you can't stop the signal when a song's that popular, man. What are you going to do? You got to let it live. Let it breathe. That's it for emails. Thanks, Drew, and thanks, Cash. You can both send, or they both send emails to currentgeek@gmail.com. That's currentgeek@gmail.com. You have thoughts and questions or things about our news episodes, you want to talk about our film episodes, or even our autopilots, that's great. Whatever you got, we're here to read it. Speaking of which, next week we've got Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, 1937 animated classic from Disney Studios, the first. Well, was it the first fully animated feature?
Yeah, the first full-length Disney animated movie.
Yes.
Feature film.
Was it the first feature film ever by anyone or just Disney? We'll find out, I guess.
No, I don't think that. I think it was just Disney's first.
I think you might be right. 37, though. Man, that was a long time ago. Anyway, I don't think I've seen it since I was a kid, so I'm totally looking forward to this. This is on our giant list of best movies ever, and we're watching them for our film festival next week, Snow White and the Seven Dwarves.
Well, I don't know. It might have been the first fully animated feature film, too.
Of all time. All right. Well, we'll find out. A big animation nerd here. So for me, this is going to be a real treat. I'm very much looking forward to it. So that'll be next week. Also, at the end of this show, right after we're done talking here, stick around because Legal Geek this week covers Clash of Patent Validity Clans, a review of early decisions handed down by the patent battles. Yeah, but and you're about your favorite game, Clash of Clans. Those guys are made, or that's a game made by Supercell and is a prolific patent holder. And a prolific patent holder named Gree, G-R-E-E. So patent stuff, Tom's favorite thing in the world, patents. His favorite movie is Patton.
Patently awesome.
He likes patent leather shoes.
That's right.
He is Pat. He likes Patton Oswalt. If he's going to go see his comedy, he's going to see Patton Oswalt.
Of course.
Yeah, see what I mean? All these patents. Anyway, that's right after this from Legal Geek. Tom, before we go, do you have anything you'd like to promote or mention before we do?
Yeah, we're changing our rewards tiers at Daily Tech News Show. If you've ever been interested in Daily Tech News Show and thought, well, I'd be a patron, but I don't know, what do I get out of it? Well, check it out. We're going to have new rewards tiers coming October 1st. So patreon.com/DTNS for more.
All right. And the only other thing I wanted to share with people today is I'm getting really dangerously close to my card game being done now. You see this. Sadly, the green bit you're seeing is getting green screen, but these are token cards for the card game I just finished, and we got packaging files in the works right now. We're going to do a Kickstarter soon to see if we can get these things finished and done and out into people's hands. The testing has gone great. I'm super stoked about this. So more about Rock Runners Incorporated very soon, including a website all dedicated to it and some video and some other stuff. So keep your eye on frogpants.com for that, because that is coming sooner than one might think. All right. I think that's everything. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for listening. As always, currentgeek.com's got everything you need, so head on over there and check it out, currentgeek.com. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, for all of you. We'll see you next time.
Legal Geek. This week we cover the first decisions coming down in the massive legal battle over patents alleged to cover basic aspects of successful video game apps such as Clash of Clans. A company called Gree holds various patents on video game improvements in Japan and the US, and they have started to assert such patents against successful game developers such as Supercell, the maker of Clash of Clans and Clash Royale, among other titles. This has launched a worldwide patent battle between Gree and Supercell that is reminiscent of other massive worldwide patent disputes, such as Apple v. Samsung over mobile phones. This legal battlefield includes a lawsuit pending in Japan between the companies, as well as a series of validity challenges filed against Gree's patents by Supercell in the U.S. Patent Office. Supercell filed 18 petitions for post-grant review, or inter-parties review, challenging that many Gree patents as invalid under U.S. patent rules, and considering each PGR, or IPR, process can cost tens to hundreds of thousands of dollars per petition. This is clearly an early step in a multi-million dollar patent war. The Patent Trial and Appeal Board, the administrative judges who handle such PGRs at the Patent Office, instituted trials on 10 of the 18 Supercell petitions, which means that 10 Gree patents are going through the process of detailed validity review this year. Most of them are challenged based on the Supreme Court's decision in Alice v. CLS Bank, which set the standards for what abstract ideas are not eligible for patent protection in the U.S. While this battle between the parties may merit future updates, this segment reports on just the first couple of significant decisions occurring in these PGR proceedings, which the Patent Trial and Appeal Board handed down this month. First, one of Gree's patents relating to improving unexpectedness, dramatic impact, and taste when medals or game items are provided as a reward to a player was stricken down as invalid because it was merely covering a patent-ineligible abstract idea. Gree had tried to distinguish their patent from the wagering game rules that have been deemed invalid abstract ideas by Federal Circuit Court opinions in recent years, but the appeal board did not find this distinction persuasive. This is actually the second Gree patent to fall afoul of Alice rules so far, joining another one that tried to broadly cover a method for displaying a battle scene in a computer game. Second, another Gree patent covering how to execute a battle in a video game was also initially indicated to be invalid as merely an abstract idea by the appeal board in a separate proceeding. But the appeal board granted Gree the right to amend their claims to add in more detail that may help the claims be directed to patent-eligible subject matter. Such requests to amend have only been granted by the appeal board in about 10% of PGR proceedings over the past few years, so this is a rare and significant win for Gree. The key will now be for Gree's counsel to develop claim amendments that properly recite how the battle execution system improves the computer system by achieving reduced processing loads and quicker execution times, as these features have been deemed critical to showing that the abstract idea of the claims is limited to a practical application, one of the ways you can achieve patent eligibility under the Alice rules. The battle will go on between these two companies, and it looks like it could help craft precedent that will define patent eligibility in the video game field for the next few years. The bottom line is, Supercell is a highly profitable company, and it makes sense to defend against broad-scale patent infringement claims and attacks to avoid losing all of that profit to Gree. The Patent Trial and Appeal Board is continuing to apply the recent decisions I've been critical of that say game rules and mechanics by themselves are too abstract for patent eligibility. So perhaps some of these cases could lead to an appeal of that issue to overturn what I personally believe to be bad precedent hurting all game designers in the tabletop and video game fields. We will continue to monitor for such developments. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.